Thank you very much. We have a quorum. I think I can hand over to you when you are ready, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Morning, everybody. Morning to our members. Morning to the Department of Education, Western Cape, which is led, I think it's led by the HOD, right? And I have an understanding that there are also members of the community that we will be dealing with that have joined us in the meeting. And morning to our support staff as well. We are coming from many long weekends. We are still a bit tired. We're coming from church, some of us. So our voices are still shaky and hoarse. But nonetheless, can you do a roll call, Llewellyn?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have yourself, Honorable Mbinto Zigaba, present. I have Honorable Lexie. I have Honorable Nodada, Honorable van der Walt, Honorable Nobo, and Dr. Boshoff, currently present, Chairperson. Apologies from the department I've received for both Minister and Deputy Minister. Unfortunately, they have to be in a cabinet meeting this morning. I also have apology for Mr. Mweli, who is currently on leave, Chairperson. I know Dr. Whittle, who was acting, may not be able to join us, and the delegation will be led by Mrs. Kaya. Thank you, Chairperson.
So thank you very much. Members, can you assist with flight of the agenda, Llewellyn?
I will do so right now, Chairperson.
We are supposed to be dealing with the petition that comes from Honorable Zucker to the Department of Western Cape Education about the CF Kuchat Primary School. And then after that, we will have the Portfolio Committee deliberations and engagements. And then we would then go to the minutes of the 19th of April. Can I then check the hand for the adoption of the agenda?
I move for the adoption of the agenda.
That is the, yes, of course. Honorable Zia? You are seconding.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name has not changed. I second the move by Honorable Sugar.
Recording in progress.
Thank you very much, Adiwele. Thank you so much. At this point, I think we would give, like I would normally deal with petitions, we would, Lucia, is it a legacy hand?
Yes, apologies, Chair.
Oh, okay. At this point, we will deal with this petition so that we don't really waste time. I'm going to give, I believe we had an opportunity to read through the petition, the content from Honorable Sukers, but anyway, I am going to give her an opportunity. Fortunately, Honorable Sukers is the member of this committee. So we are going to give her an opportunity to just take us through. And then after that, we are going to allow the department to also make a presentation. And then after that, we are going to engage with both the presentation from both Honorable Sukers and the department. Honorable Sukar.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the committee as well. If I can just ask Llewellyn assistance, I will be flighting the presentation. Thank you, Chair. I will start immediately, and I just want to acknowledge the presence of the community of Siyakuhat's representatives that very early this morning left Siyakuhat to be in Oudtshoorn in order for them to form part of these deliberations before the committee. Chair and the committee, many times I know as a portfolio committee member, not only of basic education, but of three other committees that I serve on, that we get overwhelmed with policy that gets presented to us and policy frameworks. And these policy frameworks and policy that is presented by the department many times can be like the tail wagging the dog and not the other way around. As public representatives, the issue or the reality of policy in real time is what we know as we work in our communities. And this case, Siyakuhat VGK Primary School, presents a unique opportunity for me to address the committee on three areas that I think vital for us in transforming South Africa and specifically education. And the one is the issue of where policy is made at the macro level, but at the micro level where the poorest live is not consulted. And then secondly, in terms in the area of innovation, when you have limited resources and you have existing infrastructure, like in this case, Siyakuhat Primary, and the education as a whole and the opportunities that it presents for communities, and certainly as the presidential address, the opportunity for innovation and to create job creation in every sector of our society. That's the second point. The third point is that we cannot, without consulting the very people who policy and frameworks are meant to benefit, we cannot exclude them from that process. And these three elements is very evident in the case of Siyakuhat today. And I hope that members will see the glaring gaps, as I have highlighted here, in this case that we are going to present to you. A part of the third point of the gaps that we should notice is the fact that we departments work in isolation of each other, and many times legislation or policies are drafted in isolation rather than in an integrated approach. And this case highlights the issues of rural development and rural education, and how and the agricultural sector as a rich opportunity sector for job creation. And we need to look at Siyakuhat within that context. So let me start immediately with a presentation. I am not sure, Llewellyn, if you can just help by moving the, so that we move into the, with the next slide.
Honorable speakers, because you are sharing, you are, should be able to, I can't do it from my, there we go, I think you've moved it now.
It moved, yes. One of the key things that has driven me, members, in everything that I have done, and one of the things that really speaks to me as a small farm girl, because I grew up on a farm, is a quote that many years ago I was introduced to that was made by the then President, the First Lady of the United States, Eleanor Roosevelt. It says, "When, after all, do universal rights begin? It begins in small places close to home, so close and so small that they cannot be seen on any maps of the world. Yet they are the world of the individual person and the neighborhood he lives in." Siyakuhat Primary School, VGK Primary, is such a place. That community forms part of Ward 2. It is a community that is in between the Rust and Beaufort West. The nearest alternate school is Beaufort West, which is approximately 90 kilometers away. This is a deep rural community. And the parents of these learners are predominantly landless farm workers living on isolated farms that are the nearest road to the farms are 55 kilometers away. To the school is 50 and to the nearest road is 55. This school has been in existence for over 115 years. And one of the people that are sitting on the platform, listening in, is a fourth generational learner of Siyakuchat. Her father used to be a learner or part of the very first learners at Siyakuchat. And their records indicate in 1968, you still get folders of 1968 when learners were admitted to what was then a mission school. So when we look at Siyakuchat, it is a it consists of a dormitory. It's got a number of classrooms. It's really a well-kept infrastructure and a well-kept school. It is a public school on private property, and it serves the nearby farms that is around the school. And again, these farms are so far apart from each other and so far apart from the school and from roads that the only means of transport really is with a 4x4 if you own one. And most of the time, these farm workers are traveling by donkey carts to visit farms and to visit even the school. So the community consists of farm workers that earn between 2,000 and 5,000 rand a month. And to give you context, if I say 2,000 to 5,000 rand a month, many times this is not a salary that you just receive in your bank account, but there are deductions, living expenses that gets taken off. So when I say 5,000 rand, it is not just 5,000 rand being paid into your account, but also it makes up of other living expenses. If you've lived on a farm, maybe you would have a picture of what that means, because you buy from the farmer, you buy, you know, for your living expenses, and then whatever is left off, you get paid. So that makes part of your package, so to speak. I just have a problem with my presentation. It seems that it doesn't move. So I'll go forward with a story of Siyakuchat. That would be the next slide if members have copies of the of it on their own. On their own
Honorable device. Honorable speakers, Mr. Wellen, if you can stop your sharing, and then I will try and share it from my side.
I've stopped it. Thank you, Llewellyn. There we go. So if you can keep it to the story of Siyakuchat, that is the slide that I'm on. I'll switch off the video for just for the moment so that I then, in terms of the story of Siyakuchat, I just want to add to that. So in terms of the school itself, it currently has, in the briefing document that I've sent to members, it's got under 20 learners. The reality is we've got 27 learners today at that school. We have under 20 learners that is a requested conditional exemption from school attendance at a registered school on condition that they can attend the school at Siyakuchat. And also for members, in terms of, and this can happen in terms of Section 4 of the South African Schools Act, independent schools with under 20 learners cannot legally register in the Western Cape. So this places the school in a bit of a grey area. I said to members that Siyakuchat has a very well-established infrastructure and in a very good condition. It has extensive facilities. It's got a computer lab. It's got catering facilities. It's got hostel amenities. And it is a fully functional school. And one of the critical issues, functions that the school currently provides to the community, and this is where the slide comes in context matters, it provides an informal place of safety. Now, members, I service this community. This is one of my constituencies. During the Children's Amendment Bill public hearings, submissions painted a grim picture of the increase in vulnerability of children in the Karoo. Yesterday, in preparation for this, I work consistently with DSD on cases in the Karoo, as well as with RCCS here. And I can tell you, not from a far away perspective, but from a real-time perspective, because I work in this area of what happens in Beaufort West, Prince Albert, and Oudtshoorn. We have a high crisis of high school dropout in Central Karoo. And the Western Cape Education Department must know the statistics and what the drivers of the school dropout is in that region. If they can provide it to us today, it would be very good. If they don't, then I would suggest that they need to give us a real-time picture of what it looks like. There is a rapid rise, and I pulled some statistics from RCFFA in order to give members a very short screenshot of how it looks like in the Karoo for child neglect and vulnerability cases. Their stats, just in the first quarter, 161 cases reported. Of those cases that have been reported, 102 of the cases were serious enough for safety plans to be developed, meaning there was very good grounds that the child was in danger and that the child needs to be placed in a place of safety. What people have been doing informally in Seekoeghat and those areas, people are taking children out of Prince Albert that has dropped out of school. They bring them to Seekoeghat because of the fact that it is remote. It provides a protective environment for children to be in. You can move to the next slide. So usually these children are then placed on a basic regular care basis at Seekoeghat. So this is the context in which this little school exists, and also the context of the social circumstances that exist within the Klein Karoo. And it speaks again to what I said, the broader issues of policy development and the issue of a macro view and a micro view. What is actually happening when we implement policies in an environment, and we do it from an office in Cape Town, and the people live in the Karoo with the real realities? This I want to bring to notice of the committee so that they have a full picture. Now, in terms of the closing of Seekoeghat, I called it a classic tale because I keep on seeing this, members. I've seen it with the Children's Amendment Bill, public hearings, and one of the most profound inputs was from one of the child advocacy groups that spoke of how we make laws or policies or frameworks, we put it together and we dump it together without actually knowing what is happening in other departments or how that specific policy or law speaks to laws that are being developed in other departments. So I want to say these are the issues that I want to highlight that this case highlights for me very succinctly. It highlights the siloed and one-size-fits-all approach adopted by government departments. And I will ask members to look at the briefing document on page 3, where we outlay in terms of the rights of children and the public participation process that needs to be adhered to for an effective engagement. The department will today give us a presentation in reply to this petition. I trust that members will be able to see the glaring gaps that exist. Number one, the silent approach and the one-size-fits-all approach. I mentioned that this is a small school in the middle of what we call Nerens and Erens, as you would say in Afrikaans. It's a small school there. You cannot just take a policy and adopt it and throw it into the living reality of a community without you understanding the context within which that community lives. Secondly, the rights of children to be heard and their views to be considered in the political processes that affect them have been totally ignored. There has been no consultation with children throughout the entire process. And according to the rights of children, the right to family or parental care in section 28(1)(b) of the Bill of Rights states, that every child has the right to family care or parental care. And care as defined in the Children's Act includes the guiding, directing, and securing the child's education and upbringing, including religious and cultural education and upbringing, in a manner appropriate to the child's age, maturity, and stage of development. I want to put it to the committee. When I had my very first community meeting with Siyakuchat, one of the omas of the children stood up, grandmothers, and she said, why can the department not allow our children to be strong enough before they send them far away from home, far away from their community? And this speaks to that. The removal of children to a remote school, the department is moving these kids to Teska Gedenk Primary School in Beaufort West. I want to put it to our committee. These parents live and don't have means to get to Beaufort West to see their children. These are children that are from the ages of 6 years old, grade one, up until the age of the grade seven. So if you look at what it means for a child of that level of maturity to go into that environment, I want to remind of what we heard in the Northwest, how children that comes out of rural gets placed into the dorpie or the townships, and how those children fall out of the system because they cannot adapt. The third point that I want to make, and again, there's a full-on brief around the process and the decisions that the department has made that did not take into account the factors that constitute the best interest of children. And we put it before the committee. The continued closure of Siyakuchat will isolate children from their families and their community. I want to say this word in Afrikaans because this community is Afrikaans. Vervreemd. When we close these small schools and we take children into a new environment where they are far away from the communities that they grew up in, what we are causing is an estrangement to happen emotionally, and certainly from a values perspective. And so the broader strategy of comprehensive rural development has not been considered, and neither has the rights of the family, parents, and the rights of the child has not been considered. The final point on this slide that I want to make is around the failure to ensure an effective public participation process through effective engagement. When the Western Cape Education Department came to see the community, you need to understand our community first of all. Our people do not speak as Auntie Beatrice, the SGB member that is sitting on this, has explained to me. Ons verstaan nie geleerde Afrikaans nie. So when people come and you invite them into a public participation process, the community felt that they were spoken to in a top-down approach, what I would call, and you and I would call, a top-down approach. For them it was they had very geleerde mense, educated people who came and told them what to do with their children, with a little regard for the concerns that after that meeting that they have raised. And this community appealed. They appealed to the Western Cape Education Department. They made their concerns known, as we have put it in the briefing document. Little consideration was given for this. You can move to the next slide, Llewellyn. In terms of policy development and implementation, it should be representative of the interest of the poor. And this is not in the interest of the poor. The Western Cape Education Department has applied, and in our view, a narrow focus and failed to consider the implication of school closure within the context of the unique environment, as I explained, and through the lens of integrated solutions that would include social and rural development within the agricultural sector. There is only one place of safety, YCC, in Central Karoo. Only one. And the capacity of that The capacity of that YCC at the moment is 30 children. There is no other place of safety or youth and care center for vulnerable children. And I have explained, and if I bring the Provincial Social Development Department, the RCFFF, before this committee today, they will stand in unison to say that you cannot close a place, leave an infrastructure that can potentially be used much wider than the narrow focus that is being applied here. It exposes again the lack of innovative solutions to maximize limited resources such as infrastructure to address a workable solution that speaks to the needs of the community. When I want to, if the committee would just allow me to go back to the issue of effective participation. There were no alternatives given to the parents before the opening of school this year. We were on our oversight in Free State when I got a call to say that the school is, the children are back at school because the parents have refused to send their children to any other school. But secondly, there was no communication with these with this community to ensure that they knew what other viable options were open to them. None of that. So the district on that day when I called went to the school only after we told them, parents are at that school, you have not properly consulted, and it is evident because today that those parents are in protest standing at that school because their kids are going to that school, and secondly, you have never communicated to them after you have told them that the school is closed. You can move to the next slide. This community is a poor community, I've said to the committee, but this is not a dependent community. If you understand the psyche of the people in the Karoo, it is especially Siyakuchat. They have kept the school open in protest against the Western Cape Education Department. They have mobilized and facilitated in order to ensure that their children will eat because the department flat out refused to assist us to keep at the very least the National School Nutrition Program open for the school. They want the school to be reopened. They want at least temporary teaching, supervision and care at the school while discussions take place with the department on the future of the school and the alternatives that they are considering. They want a resumption of the school feeding. The school assets owned by the Western Cape Education Department, for it not to be removed, because it would literally be impossible for them to restart the school or to get the interest of third-party backers. Now, I want to stop at the last point because this community drove all the way from Oudtshoorn to come and see the department with me. And we came down, we made the case of the community as we are doing it now with the committee. We asked there for the department not to do a strong arm, strong arm the community by removing the equipment, but to give them appropriate time in order for them to come up with a workable solution. And the department failed to do that. We literally had an apartheid-style removal of property that was initiated by the department with a threat of the police, with children outside the school, and the district officials who failed in their process dismally, now having a Stalingrad approach by forcing the community to say they want all the equipment of the department. So we are asking this committee to support the community of Siyakuchat in their desire to seek an innovative solution for them and for their children and specifically for the Klein Karoo, and to think within the wider framework of rural development. I want for the committee to consider the following. I asked the department, the national department for the rural education policy. And I can say to the committee The rural education policy environment is underdeveloped, and we need to increase our oversight of the policy development process. Right now, 3,000 rural schools have been closed in the last 3 to 5 years. Schools under 135 learners are considered non-viable by the department and the provincial education department, and they are closed. And learners are sent to consolidated mega schools. Yet, there is no research. There is no research on what drives the high school dropout in those rural areas. There's no research, as you can see with Sepukhat certainly. There has been no social environmental impact assessment made. So we sit in an education policy environment that is underdeveloped, and it is our role as Parliament to do proper oversight over the department and not allow the tail to wag the dog. We know what the reality is on the ground. We live in our rural communities. We know what the pressures are when parents are being removed or need to move for the sake of job opportunities or for the sake of getting a better education for their children. They need to move into townships, dorpies. They need to move in there, and many times these people are left with very little options in terms of shelter, home shelter. The school closure processes need to be amended to get community buy-in and to meet the constitutional standards. And research into rural and education and the impact of school closures is needed. There are unexpected consequences of policy, and I've highlighted that in my very first point. And those are the socio-economic assessments that must be done in order for policies to be done in order for consequences of policies to be properly considered. We have in that community, if I can give you an idea, we have a lot of parents that are under 35. And the agriculture sector, as I said in the beginning of this presentation, is the one sector where there is opportunity for skills development, for land ownership. Why are we not integrating this into the rural education framework? And you have an opportunity here, the department and the community, for us to empower the community to work with the department to develop solutions, not in isolation, but with a policy framework and policies that is steeped into the real-time realities on the ground. There is a lot of opportunity here. And if the committee should receive a report back on the progress made on these are the considerations. Llewellyn, if you can just indicate if I have another, I think that is my last slide, committee members, and just, lastly, I want to say that if these considerations in terms of policy framework and the closing of rural schools is not properly considered, we are contributing to the breakdown of culture and values of our children. And we have seen such a great example in the Free State with that beautiful school. If it is done right, how we can create wholesome solutions that will work for rural communities. I am speaking to my colleagues here, and I know that you know the ground. And I want to say, consider the plight of the people of Sepukhat by coming around this community and also broadly. Let this case be a tale for us as lawmakers that oversee policy, that we demand that policies be considered properly, not just at the macro level, but at the micro level as well. And that the poorest people that are meant to benefit from these policies be properly engaged, because that is their right as South Africans in a democratic dispensation. And lastly, that there be an integration of local, provincial, and national government departments on bringing solutions to communities and not having a siloed, one-size-fits-all approach. Because we can do so much more if we take the infrastructure that is there in these rural communities and put it inside the broader context of both the social needs of communities as well as the educational needs of our children. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sudhir?
Yes, Chair.
You are done.
Yes, Chair. Yes, Chair.
Can I allow the department to give us a presentation? Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Archie Lewis. I'm the acting head of the department, and I will deal with one of my other colleagues with the presentation. Is the presentation flighted? I just want to check.
It is, Mr. Lewis.
Okay, thank you very much. Chair, what we are going to do is basically to provide you with the process that unfolded, where it started with the school and until such time that the school was closed and what perhaps ensued during this year. Chair, is someone else meddling with my presentation?
Mr. Lewis,
is that Mr. Brown?
Mr. Lewis, I am on the second slide where it starts with vision. You just need to indicate to me when I need to shift on my slides because you cannot do it from your side.
Okay. You can carry on with the vision. The vision of the department is basically quality education for every child in every school, in every classroom in the province. That is what the WCED is striving for. This presentation, Chairperson and members of the portfolio committee will deal with those 13 points: the conditions for an administrative decision, the legislation guiding school closures and mergers, the conditions for school closure, the minister's intention to close a school, the reason why the school is has been identified for closure, national's position around small unviable schools, the public consultation process that unfolded, and then finally the minister's decision to close the school. And after that, how as a department we manage the assets and the resources of the school. And then during this year, we had a meeting with Honorable Supers and the delegation, and recently we provided Honorable Sukers with a letter regarding certain issues that she raised in the letter. And then also we just want to reflect a little bit on the process of registering an independent school. I will now ask my colleague, Mr. Jankis, just to take us through a few slides, and then I will come in again at the end of this presentation, Chair. Thank you. Mr. Jankis.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee. And good morning to the people from Sekuhat and all other people listening in. Mr. Brown, shall we continue to the next slide, please? How do I get this thing away now? The Western Cape Education Department, sorry, Mr. Brown, there's a black line here on the side. They just wanted to be removed. I don't know how.
You must minimize it, Mr. Jankis.
Okay, sorry, thank you. The Western Cape Education Department considers the closure and or merger of schools under its auspices to be an administrative action based on the definition of administrative action as enshrined in the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. Based on the point one, the WCED is accurately aware that such decisions must be made under an empowering provision, i.e. the decision must be lawful. Can't take just a decision, the decision must be lawful. It also means that the WCED as a juristic person is aware that any administrative action taken that affects a person must be procedurally fair. So on the, from the onset, I want to state that the process was it was followed was lawful and procedurally fair. By operation of the law as stated in PAYA under section 232B1, the WCD understands what procedurally fair means. Adequate notice of the nature and purpose of the proposed administrative action must be given. That was done. A reasonable opportunity must be given to make representations. That was done to the community and to the governing body. A clear statement of the administrative action must be given. That was also done. Adequate notice of any right of review of internal appeal where applicable and adequate notice of the right to request reasons. Next slide, Mr. Brown. Thank you. Shall we go to the next one, Mr. Brown? Any decision or administrative action must have an enabling and or empowering provision, i.e. it must be lawful. So if I go, can just jump to number two, section 33, subsection 1 or SASA states that a member of the executive council may, by notice in the provincial gazette, close a public school. That is the empowering provision to close the school which has been used in this case. Next slide, Mr. Brown, please. So SASA section 33, subsection 2 states that the member of the executive council may not close the school unless he, she has, one, informed the SGB of his intentions so to act and the reasons or such. This was done, granted the SGB a reasonable opportunity to make representations to him in relation to such action. As stated, this was also done, conducted a public hearing on reasonable notice to enable the community to make representations to her in relation to such and given due consideration to any such representations received. The C and D, these points were also done. The MEC signed a letter on the 19th of August 2020 directed at the chairperson of the governing body of primary school of Siyakuhat Primary School, indicating her intention to close said school by the 31st of December 2020. The chairperson signed acknowledgement of receipt of the letter on 3 September 2020. If I can just go to the next page, you can see there the signature of the chairperson having received the letter acknowledging of receipt. And if you look at point 11 there, sou geen vertoë of kommunikasie van die beheerliggaam van die skool ontvang word teen die datum en tyd, na, tyd waarna in paragraaf 7 hierbo verwys word nie, sal ek aanvaar dat die beheerliggaam verkies om geen vertoë in hierdie verband aan my te rig nie. So hierdie goed, these things were done. Next page, Mr. Brown. So the reason stipulated in said letter, the school had the learner enrollment of 19 learners. It must be noted the school has had dwindling enrollment numbers from 2016 when the school had 34 learners. And these numbers were steadily coming down, reaching 19 in 2020. The school offered the curriculum from grade 1 to 6. Grades 1 to 3 is what we call the foundation phase, and grades 4 to 6 is called the intermediary phase. It is thus clear that multi-grade classes were offered in one class group at the school from grade 1 to grade 6. There were no prospects that the school would experience learner growth in the immediate future. No prospects. Most of the parents of the learners work on the local farms, but they constantly migrated to nearby towns for better work opportunities. The school had two classrooms that could accommodate about 80 learners with a capacity of 80. It was not feasible. In terms of the regulations relating to minimum uniform norms and standards for public school infrastructure, the school is considered a micro-primary school, as Honorable Suka has indicated, with a capacity of less than 135 learners. The school could not fulfill its financial obligations to its creditors, like the food suppliers, and could also not afford to pay its hostel staff. School was in arrears with the payment of their salaries, which is a risk. The school had one substantive post on the educator staff establishment for the 19 learners. This educator, who also served as the principal of the school, was appointed on a contract basis with end date of 31st December 2020. It was not educationally sound for one educator to teach 9 learners over 2 bands. It means the foundation band or foundation phase and the intermediary phase, as well as over 6 classes or grades. And on top of that, being the school principal, because that person has to do all the duties that the principal has to do. It was also not economically viable and justifiable for a school to have a ratio of 1 educator to only 19 learners, where the great majority of primary schools have an educator-learner ratio that tends to 1:40. This is not in line with the department's affordable basket of posts. In fact, I just want to stand still here for a second. At this point, for a second, it is. If we look at it, if we have one teacher for 19 learners, we can just imagine the country will not be able to afford such small classes. Such small classes will not be afforded. It is not possible. If I look at our budget that we have at this moment, it means we will need about another 20 billion rand just to have such small classes. And hence, it is not economically viable, neither justifiable. Next slide, Mr. Learners enrolled at the school could be placed appropriately at Teskrige Denk Primary School, Prince Albert Primary School, or Klaastroom Primary School. The schools mentioned in point 12 had ample accommodation available to accommodate the learners of Seekoegat Primary School. Teskrige Denk Primary School had a fully equipped hostel in which learners could be accommodated if required. These were all the reasons offered why the school had to be closed. Next slide, Mr. Brown. The 3 receiving schools offered monograde classes also had suitably qualified educators and learners who benefit from a wider range of extracurricular and co-curricular activities. I just want to go back to the vision of this department. We want quality education for each child in every classroom in each school in this province. And it is not possible to have some of 19 learners in one class where there's 2 specific phases in the class as well as 6 different class groups in the class. The teacher cannot give proper attention to all those learners. It is not educationally sound to have to perpetuate such a situation. The learners who have been included in the learner transport schemes and routes applicable in the area and or they could reside in the hostel. Next slide, Mr. Brown, please. The national position. In terms of Section 5A1A of SASSA, the Minister of Basic Education published regulations relating to minimum uniform norms and standards for public school infrastructure on the 29th of November 2013, in which a primary school of less than 125 learners is declared a micro-primary school. In the document, standard parameters for closure and merger of micro-public schools, version 1, draft 2, dated 25 March 2017 of the Department of Basic Education, it is stated in point 3.1 that only schools classified as micro-schools should be considered for closure. It goes further in sub-point 2, where it states if the learner enrollment figure is more than 20%, a formal request for approval, it must be submitted to the MEC for closure. So by implication, if I go to the next slide, Mr. Brown, please. By implication, where the LAF is equal to or less than 20%, it is not really necessary to do the formal process. However, the WCED honors the process prescribed in SASSA. So we do whatever we do in line with what SASSA prescribes. The 19 learners at the school were less than 20% of 135, and 20% of 135 is 27 learners. Further, the DBE published a document in terms of reference for a rationalization
closure and merger of small and non-viable schools. The document states that the aim of the project of rationalization is to improve quality of education, expedite the resourcing of schools, promote access to schools and retention of learners and educators in rural and farm schools. And we subscribe to this. Next sir. DBE also published the guidelines for the rationalization of small or non-viable schools in July 2009. In the guidelines, it states that large and better resourced schools will contribute to the development and poverty alleviation in the rural areas. It also states the following criteria to consider in closing schools. First, the number of learners, the curriculum considerations, which we have, accessibility of the schools, school infrastructure, the retention of learners, attracting and retaining educators, and public schools on private property. It also needs to be mentioned that very many teachers do not want to go to the rural areas to go and teach. It's extremely difficult to attract and to retain educators in the rural areas. It must be noted that WCED's process is similar to the process outlined in the DBE guidelines. Next page, please. There is a national drive to assess micro schools and to close it in an attempt to give these learners access to better education at better resourced schools. WCED is also busy with such process. Next slide, Mr. Brown. Consultations took place, public consultation process. The consultation took place on the 18th September 2020, where the SGB and the SGB of the school indicated that they were not in favor of the closure of the school. However, it must be stated I didn't find any governing body yet that was in favor of really closing a school. The public consultation process also took place on the 22nd of October 2020, and the parents of the community indicated that they were not in favor of the closure of the school. Once again, the parents were not in favor, neither the governing body. A summary of the representations made from the parents. The uncertainty created by the rumors spread by some of the school closure in 2019 forced parents to relocate learners from Siku Khat and enroll them in neighboring schools. There were rumors spread in 2019, the school will close in 2019. The school has adequate accommodation for the learners, according to the parents, with three classrooms and a fully equipped computer room. The learners who are relocated to neighboring schools at such an early stage are likely not to attend school regularly. Same issues that Honorable Suka has mentioned. The school no longer has a financial crisis and all current debts have been settled. Parents are concerned about the COVID-19 virus and the safety of their children in neighboring schools due to the pandemic. Learners state...
Chairperson, I think we may have lost Mr. Jankis. I'm not sure whether he could just check his...
No, I can hear him. I don't know about other people.
So I can... shall I continue?
Yes, other members, can someone just confirm what is going on?
We can hear Mr. Jankis.
Can hear him, yes. Fine.
Very
no,
Mandivelin,
it's only you. I can hear, yes. You can proceed, Mr. Jankis.
Okay, so learners stay 30 to 50 kilometers from the nearest learner transport scheme pickup points. This is what one of the points the parents mentioned. And the relocation of learners will have a financial impact on parents for new school uniforms, which will have to be purchased by parents. Next slide, Mr. Brown, please. Mr. Brown, next slide, please.
I'm just having some trouble on my side, but you can continue. I'll follow you.
I need to see the.
I'm just trying to figure out which slide we have to be on.
And you can go back.
Can you just go back backwards, one or two backwards, I think?
Yeah.
The next one, please. Then the next one. Then the minister's decision to close the school. Even though the consultation process was concluded in 2020, and though the MEC indicated her intention to close the school on 31st December 2020, the school could not close by 31st December 2020 as a submission requesting the final closure reached the MEC only in 2021. The MEC then signed the submission on 25 February 2021 and she indicated that the closure be done subject to the fact that the school now only closes on 31st December 2021. This had to be done because 31st of December 2020 was in the past at that stage. That parents be informed immediately by the district and be assisted to reassure them of the safety and beneficial impact for their children if the children move to a bigger school. Next slide, please. Another submission was elevated to the MEC on 17 March 2021 and the submission was signed off on 17 May, in which the MEC editor writer's approval is subject to the receipt of a report on consultation. The report was submitted in September 2021. The MEC's decision thus prevailed. So, if I can just go back quickly. Just one back. Can I just go one back, Mr. Brown? So this was supposed to be done. This was done by the district, and the district has done what the minister requested them to do, and hence the minister's or the MEC's decision then prevailed. Next slide, please. Next slide. An educator was appointed on contract and completed the contract on 31st December 2021. All movable assets are still on the premises. The relocation of assets was halted on request of Honorary MP Sukers and the delegation. The banking account of the school is not closed yet. The lease agreement with the church has been terminated. Then, I think, I'm not too sure whether Mr. Lewis is going to come in here.
Thank you, Mr. Jankis.
Yeah,
thank you, Chair. Before I carry on with the next two slides, I think as a department, We admit, because we experience it every day, that the closure of a school remains a painful process for the community, maybe for two reasons. One, historically, the school has taught or provided education for generations of that community. One, the name of the school has got sentimental value, and of course, because of the inherent fears of parents of letting your children away from home. So we confirm that we are aware of that, but unfortunately we operate within a framework where we need to seek the best interest of the child, but also to deal with the resources of the education department and of government in an optimal manner. Now, Chair, back to the slide. On request of Honorable Sukers, she met the HOD on the 7th of February with the delegation of the community of Sekwekgat. The head of department explained that neither he nor the minister has appeal authority on the closure of the schools, because at that meeting, Honorable Sukers requested the head of the department to consider reopening the school. And the head of the department just confirmed that he has no authority to deal with such an appeal. Neither does the minister has the authority to deal with the appeal, because the minister has taken the decision and the minister cannot deal with the appeal on her own decision. The school was closed on 31st December and provision was made by the WC to place the learners appropriately at other schools. I must mention it, Chair, because of the fact that neither the SGB nor the parents wanted to move the children. It was extremely difficult for us to engage the parents in a proper manner so that they can assist us with the placement of their learners. Some of the parents didn't participate in that process. So the delegation then requested the head of the department not to remove the mobile units, because they will now attempt to open an independent school on the site, to which the head of the department agreed to the request. I must put it can you stay on that slide? I must put it to the community, Chair, that when we close a school, what normally happens is we remove all the assets or whatever belongs to the department, and we normally move it to the receiving school where the learners will be located. Now, part of our assets on this site is 4 mobile units. Now, I must also mention that 2 of those mobile units were, as part of our planning, destined to be placed elsewhere because of the need of learner pressures in the province. But despite that need for that mobile units to be removed, the head of the department agreed to Masukas and the delegation that we will leave the assets there to allow them opportunity to start the process to open an independent school as what they have suggested. The next slide, Mr. Brown. So as a department, we then waited since that meeting, the first meeting we had in this year, for the Sirkuihat delegation to come back with a plan of how they are going to establish this private school so that we can assist them. That plan did not arrive at the department. However, Honorable Sukers wrote again a letter to the head of the department in April, where she requested a few things. Amongst others, she requested the department to appoint a teacher at the school, which was closed by now, is still closed, the appointment of 2 teaching assistants at the school, the provision of food and the assistance to register an independent school. Next slide. The HOD then responded to Honorable Sukers on the 8th of April and pointed out the following, that the WCED cannot allocate a teacher to the school because the school has been closed and provision has been made for the learners at 3 potential other schools. Similarly, the department could also not provide the school with 2 teaching assistants because it will be outside the provision of the framework of the project. There are clear criteria contained in the Division of Revenue Act on the NSNP and the feeding of learners. And the prescripts of DORA do not make provision to provide food to a school that has been closed. Furthermore, learners have returned 100% to school, and it is difficult, if not impossible, for other schools to share their stock with Sirkuihat, because that is also what Honorable Sukers requested, whether we cannot channel food from other schools to this closed school. And lastly, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the details of Mr. William Jankis, one of the presenters on this platform, was provided as the contact person in the WCD to assist with the process of establishing an independent school. I must mention, Chair, that the establishing of an independent school doesn't start with the department. It starts with whoever wants to establish that school. We will give guidelines and provide the necessary forms for the completion of it. And after that, we will then deal with the registration of that school. And Chair, just on one point that Masukas has raised, that the WCED doesn't register independent schools with less than 19 learners. That is not true. The WCED will register a school. It is just that school will be excluded from all the benefits that that an independent school would have received under, as soon as that target of 20% and over is reached. Thank you, Chair. I will ask Mr. Jankis to deal with the last slide.
Thank you, HOD. Chair, subject to SASA and any applicable provincial legislation, any person may at his or her own cost establish an independent school. So there's nothing prohibiting Ms. Suka and all the people from Sekuhat to establish an independent school. There are certain compliance and registration documents which the WCD can provide on request. As soon as there is a request, we will provide it. After a year, the school may apply for a subsidy, and the school must have a minimum number of 20 learners if the school wants to qualify for a subsidy. Now, if I can just stand still here, if this school will now get this independent school will get the maximum amount, and I round off to 8,800 rand, then for the year, for the 20 learners, you can multiply it by 8,800 rand, and that gives us roughly in the range of close to 180,000 rand. Now, colleagues, that is I don't know what the school can really do with that money. If the school must still look after the school, they must pay the teachers and all other expenses. So these are the things that the community must also consider. And the WCD does not provide any staff, neither does it provide any other resources to independent schools. That's the only amount that we supply. And this has got nothing to do with us. This is basically what happens right across the country. And the standards, curriculum delivery at such a school may not be inferior to public schools. And I want people to understand they must reflect on Section 6A and Section 46 of South African Schools Act that speaks to these issues, that the curriculum that is offered must not be, or the curriculum delivery must not be inferior to any other schools. Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee members. This is the end of our presentation. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Sorry, Chair, just to conclude, as indicated, we are more than willing to assist the community to establish that independent school. In fact, our assets are still there as they have requested it, but that process they must initiate. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Lewis and Mr. Jonkers. Members, I would ask just to allow a member from the community to also say something, because I don't think that will be a harm in a meeting, because of this is a petition that we are dealing with. Honorable Scott, do you have someone that can just add some few things?
Yes, Chair, I do. I will just get them to, if Llewellyn can just assist them to get onto the platform. They are on the platform. They are ready to speak, Chair.
Can you get an indication who is going to speak?
It is going to be the Pastor Willie Kutsia. He is a teacher as well, and he is servicing the community of Siekuchat. He will be speaking.
All right. Pastor, thank you.
Good morning. I really appreciate this opportunity on behalf of Siekuchat, the children and the parents. Sure. I must say that I'm moved with everything that has been said. One thing that I want just to confirm is the fact that what Honorable Suka said is that we should not look like, soos in Afrikaans said, donkies at het oogklapper loop. We should look wider. So the policies and the principles that WCD and National Department of Education use at the moment really does not suit a place like Siekuchat. And that is something that I want to emphasize. Honorable members, chairperson, we also know about other small schools. Believe me if I tell you that we have confirmation about a school where there's only 14 learners. Yes, 14 learners, 1-4 in this year 2022, and that school has not received any threat of being closed. We want Department of Education, especially WCED, to really consider that Siekuchat is a very unique situation, and we need you to look at it from a different perspective. You know, we've been involved, myself, with that community for the last, I think it goes up to 4 years now, and the scenario is simple. You know, one of the things that I want to share with you, one day as I was there, I just feel in my spirit, you know, Holy Spirit was just telling me that the year is a move where they want these children to become orphans. And I want you to think about that. Do we really want a generation of orphans to be raised while we have the opportunity to do different? The impact on this community, I can tell you what wasn't even mentioned. The few parents that were involved in the school as hostel staff, as assistants, just imagine, because at the moment, there's no income in those households. So the impact is not just on learners as such. And I want to say, I've read a document, I think, in 2015 somewhere, where there was a discussion in Parliament on the whole issue of deep rural schools and that. And from what I could read, there was a move to really look at rural schools from a different perspective, which I honestly can't see, I feel, or I sense it at the moment. So on behalf of Siekuchat, I want to ask you as members of this committee, of this portfolio committee, to look at things with a clear conscience and ask yourself, are we doing justice to these communities? I can tell you that myself, I started my school career in a school where there was one teacher, yes, only one teacher, and that was in the year, I think 1971, somewhere there. And, you know, I'm sitting here today as a product. Mind you, when I got to matric, I was again in a class where we were only 15, and I can tell you the result speaks for itself. I think we need to be honest with ourselves also that the idea or the motion that the big schools gives quality. Most of our so-called big schools at the moment don't have sports facilities, don't really have extramurals. And so it is just an excuse to get our learners away from an environment, you know, regarded and be comfortable within themselves. One thing that I want to ask you is to consider also, I visited one day the community just to establish for myself, you know, some kind of understanding what is the real impact. I went to one house of a previously advantaged person, a white farmer, whose child attends a school in Beaufort West with the idea it's a bigger school, a better school. When I got there, he was not there, but he came a while after that driving his Amarok VW, and there was a Tiguan standing parked in the garage. On the same farm, there's a farm worker whose child was also now in Beaufort West attending school. And obviously it was after consultation, or the farmer, you know, said, you know, I want you to consider this. But this is the truth. The farmer did, they told me, he just quickly went to Beaufort West to see how the children are doing. They've got a home there, his wife lives there, and the children are there. The farm worker, however, told me, Pastor, I don't know how my child is doing. I've tried to phone, but I can't tell. Just on that one day, I was just, you know, shocked to see the impact on two families. And this is the type of families that we have. People that don't have the means to contact or to be with their children. I want to say to you, this community will be dead if this is what we want to pursue. We have an opportunity in South Africa as a country to really look at our rural communities and develop them, but also to support the structures in the system that does not work. I want to also just underline and emphasize what Honorable Sukers was saying to you about the centers for children with problems. There's only one in the whole Little and Central Karoo, and I'm part of that institution at the moment. They don't have the capacity for themselves to host, all because they must now also take children that actually need to go to other institutions where children with more challenging characters are. Sekuhat offered the opportunity, and there's many cases that has been given to us about children that came to Sekuhat with their challenges, with their problems, but they've changed for the better. So there's a plea, beloved, that we will make a decision for the benefit of our country at large. And I want to say to you today that with me, we have a community that says, listen to our hearts, listen to this plea, and don't just do things based on too simple, because I think the Department of Education has got two things that they use. It's the number of learners and viability, and that in itself does not answer the question. So I think this will be my humble plea for now, and I can tell you, look at these people here. We have them, Auntie Beatrice, just look into the camera quickly. She is the chairperson that fights for these people. We also have Cassidy quickly. Cassidy is one of this is actually his mom. Cassidy is one of our acting teachers, and we also have Shantae here. These two, at the moment, they are taking care of those learners, and we are having some, you know, support from by getting material, so the children are actually getting the work that should be done in the curriculum. But I also know that, you know, it's a challenge, and we are asking you to really consider the basic needs, as you said it well, every child in the school, every child quality. Why can't we do it for those children? We have the facility, we have the ability, and I think we can do it. And we also have one of our Omas here, who is the driver today, who brought them here. And we want to ask you, help us today. Help us to help those children and make a change. If we can have a success story, Sekuhat will be there. And I can guarantee you it will happen. Let me just say before I forget, we've been able to feed the children, not to the best that they should get, but I can tell you, God has helped us. And with God's favor, even as we speak, they have food every day. But we would really appreciate it, because at the moment, it's members of communities from around the country that has opened their hearts and their wallets to help us to sustain what is on the table. And for that, I want to thank you all. And again, Honorable Sukers, I want to thank you again for your efforts and for your passion to help making South Africa a better country. Thank you all.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Pastor Kutsia. I am now going to allow members to interact with the with everything that has happened on the Kurusuka's presentation, the department, and also what now Pastor Kutsi has also said. I am now, I don't know, Honorable Sugars, is your hand up?
Yes, sir, it is up.
Do you want to ask questions?
I actually just wanted to respond to some of the things that were said by the department.
No, I think you must wait for members to first interact.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair.
There is a hand of Boshoff and Honorable Tembe Kwayo. Can I allow those two hands to start the interaction? Honorable Boshoff? Honorable Boshoff, are you able to? Can you hear me? Mr. Tembe Kwayo? Can someone hear me in the meeting?
We can hear you, Chair.
I can hear you, Chair.
Now, where are the people that have raised their hands? Okay, can you proceed?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, and appreciation to the presentations that were made today. But I have two questions to ask specifically to the Western Cape Department of Education. And one is in connection, your vision says quality education for every child to in every classroom, in every school in the province. Please consider that and think about it, because what the vision says is the exact opposite of what the Western Cape Department of Education did and is continuing to justify their actions in connection with this particular school. From the pastor who is the principal said, there is a school that has 14 learners, but there is no threat of the school being closed. If this is found to be true, why is it happening? Why is there no fairness in the application or the implementation of the policies of education? If this is found to be true, then definitely I would say you are unfair, but I'm leaving it to you as a question to say, is it true? And are you aware of this? And you have to be aware of it. You don't say you are not aware of it. And why is the same thing not being applied to that particular school? Second question, the presenter, Mr. Walters, talked about the uniform. Say, for an example, those learners are in class. What is the classroom? Something like that. And then he said, proudly so, to say they should buy, the buying of the uniform should come from their parents. And from the information that was presented here, the pastor said there is no income in those households. And I know that the uniform is very expensive. Where do they get the money to buy the new uniform for the schools? And secondly, they said they can be accommodated at those schools. Who is responsible for the payment of the accommodation of those poor learners? Will they be accommodated for free? And if they won't be accommodated for free, who is supposed to pay for those learners? Because it has been said that some of the parents only earn between 2,000 and 5,000. So how will they be able to can afford such a uniform? According to me, I think somewhere, somehow, there was a problem in consultation. Consultation particularly with the affected parents of the children. I think something went somewhere wrong, because it was about the letter being sent to SGB chairperson signing, taking the letter to that other one. But I just want to know, what about the communication with the community at large, everybody being called so that the whole issue can be addressed as it may be. But my feeling is we still need to engage on this thing. I feel it's very much unfair to close the school. Not enough research was done, particularly about the situation at the school. Not enough feasibility type of research was done to this school. So it was just quick taking consider information and closing the school. I feel it's very much unfair. If the minister is here, let her be engaged on this matter to say you are killing the nation in actual fact. You said that it's the year of the learning, leadership driving resilience, but you are doing the opposite thereof. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tembekwayo. Honorable Poso, are you there?
Honorable Chair, I'm trying again. Can you hear me this time?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I apologize for the previous problem. This whole memorandum that we received from Honorable Sukus, brought quite a number of different thoughts to my mind. The first one is the citation in the Bible where Jesus said, and I only know it in Afrikaans, so I don't know if I translated exactly correctly, but that the Sabbath is made for humans, not humans for the Sabbath. And that is the way in which it was dealt with rules. In this, Mr. Yankees went down the list and said, we should do this, we did, we should do that, we did, we should do the other thing, we did, we should do another thing, we did. As if these rules, I would almost say it was given by the Creator, and now humans have to adapt to these rules. Well, there's a very... a really strong case made by Honorable Sukus on how not only in the narrow definition of education and transfer of the curriculum, but the whole community with children as growing up in their community, in proximity to their parents and their aunts and their whole extended families, how they are influenced by a decision to close the school. So Honorable Sukers at some place made the statement that the community experienced this as a tick-boxing exercise, and the way in which Mr. Yankees dealt with it with respect seemed to me to confirm that notion. I know that since the Union of South Africa had been created in 1910, there had been this drive towards bigger schools, to closing down smaller farm schools and centralizing education in bigger schools, with not much evidence having been created that that was really beneficial to the children in their, let's say, sociological setting, and even in educational respect. Now, I don't want to add anything to what was very clearly put by both Pastor Kutsia and Honorable Sukers about the differences. I want to just note in passing that Beaufort West might look like a small place when you travel from Cape Town to Johannesburg, but for the Karoo it's a very big place and very much different from what it would be in a place like Sekugat. Now, I've been involved with a school nearby in Rietbron, but it's actually just in the Eastern Cape, not in the Western Cape. We had the exact same problem, and they were assisted by a school where I taught before I came to Parliament, who is actually specializing in rendering services to homeschools and micro schools in order to be able to give quality education, as the head of the department stated, not inferior to anything that would be presented by a public school, over a multitude of grades. Now, I want to refer to something else quickly, and that is that I made quite a study of the Cuban educational system at a certain stage about 10 years ago. And one of the ground principles of the Cuban educational system is that children should be taught as near to their homes as possible. And therefore, very small schools, even with less than 10 children, is a fundamental building piece of the educational system in that country, where they have big cities, but they also have very remote mountainous ranges with just a small number of children, even from two or three or four families in one area, has to be serviced in educational terms by the education department. And some way should be devised to do so. And therefore, educational training or teachers training in Cuba includes, as a very important part of it, the teaching in multi-grade classes, even across a very wide spectrum, such as in this case. And it struck me that South Africa, who in several instances tried to emulate Cuba and to honor Cuba in several other instances, why South Africa would disregard this experience in which Cuba gives the lead, and which is very, very relevant to large tracts of South Africa where the population is sparse, far from each other, and where these farm schools really do not only play an educational role, but a very central social role in knitting a community together. Now, I'm always almost a little bit despondent even when starting with this whole meeting, because just when we entered Parliament in 2019, we inherited from the previous administration a similar petition coming from the Gongong community near Barkley West, between Barkley West and the Alport's Whip in the Francis Baard district. And they similarly made a very clear case why they should have a school for their community. And it was dismissed with a few friendly, sympathetic words, but no action at all. And I think it was only the Freedom Front, the Economic Freedom Fighters, and Al Jamaa who voted against the memorandum or against the decision not to listen to the community of Gongong. Now, I want to return now to the administration, all the different acts and procedures that were set out, and to say that that set of procedures were, I'm quite sure, although I don't know it as a fact, was devised to regulate and administer education in larger, more densely populated areas, where it would indeed make no sense to have a small school like that if you can, you know, just at kilometers or two, you can have another school. But this is clearly something fundamentally different. And sometimes it's very difficult to try to have a set of rules revisited just, you know, for some hypothetical reason. But a community like Sekuchat, who really present themselves in a very clear and decisive way, saying that we want to maintain our integrity as a community by having a school, it forces one, it gives a concrete, it takes the abstractness of it away and say, okay, so we have these rules, it's clear according to these rules that Sekhwegat cannot be accommodated. But is Sekhwegat wrong or are our rules wrong? And I want to put it that our rules are wrong and that our rules should be much more flexible in order to be able to accommodate a community like this. I mean, with all respect, it's nonsensical to say that if you have 20 learners in Sekhwegat per teacher, that means you will have to have 20 learners per teacher in each and every school in the province. I mean, it's fundamentally different. It's not comparable. So I think if one looks at in practical terms, Sekhwegat will have to, as a transitional measure, maybe register a private school or an independent school. And I would like to collaborate with Honorable Sukers because, as I mentioned, the school where I used to teach can really assist in this whole process. But it should be a transition until our rules are reset in a way which can accommodate a school like Sekhwegat. And that is, amongst others, one of the reasons why the Freedom Front contends that the whole bellable should be repealed. It should not proceed on this way because there are instances such as this which are not even considered in the bellable. I think it should be back to the drawing board, and I think that members like myself and Honorable Sukers, whom I really want to commend on this great piece of work that she did and the involvement with the community, that we would actually like to be involved because we really know this rural setup from the inside out. It is our world. It is where we function. We know what is going on, maybe even better than some of the officials who, on a regularly basis just visit the schools and go on to the next place where they can buy a cold Coke. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Platwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to your good self, the members of the committee, the Department of the Western Cape and the National that are present, and also the community of Sekhwegat. Good morning to you all. Chairperson, let me also appreciate the two presentations that we received from Honorable Sukers and also from the Department of the Western Cape Education. Chair, you know, it's always a concern when we receive such petitions of schools that have been closed by, you know, provincial departments or that are seen to be not viable, but not considering, you know, the importance of such schools as assets to communities. As I was listening to the presentation, you could hear that the community has spoken not once, not twice, even when there was a community participation, they were against the school closure, even though they understand that according to policies and laws, it's a non-viable school. But they are trying their level best to make sure that the learners or the children remain within the communities, within their parents. They live with their parents because those learners are very, very young. They are at a very young age, and it's something that is it's worrisome because it's not for the first time we deal with such a case. Chair, there are so many cases that have been reported in the Western Cape where farm owners would evade farm workers, you know, and leave them vulnerable with nowhere to go, You know, we have seen such in the television, we've seen such in the media. So would also want to hear from the Western Cape, how do they deal with such cases? Because I believe it's not only this community that has such a struggle when it comes to the challenges that they are facing there in the Western Cape. And when we went for oversight, I heard Honorable Sukers also mention it in the northwest of the mega schools, and also in the Free State, whereby you'd find that most of the farmers or most of the farms that we visited, you'd find there's only a primary school. Similar case to this case that we're dealing with, where there's a farm, a primary school, and when you ask what is happening to learners, what happens to learners after they finish maybe the intermediate phase, what happens to them? Most of them would find out they drop out and go work in the farms. Most of them will make it and go elsewhere to where there is a secondary school where they could attend, you know, up until they finish matric or the high school level. So it's also a question that I have when it comes to the school. Yes, it's a primary school up until to grade 6, and then what happens after that? Where do the learners go to? Where do they attend to further their studies? Can they trace them? What happens to them after they finish grade 6? Because I think one of the reasons why Northwest and Free State has came up with the idea of the mega schools is because of such a incidents whereby you'd find that there is no high school in farm areas or rural areas, and then learners would end up, you know, dropping out and go and work in farmers or just, you know, end up nowhere, not even being traced in the system. Where are those learners? But in this case, I do agree with the two speakers that have spoken to say the community are requesting their learners to remain within, you know, within the community and with their parents, because these kids are very young. From the age of 6, you know, they're at a primary level. I think the Department of the Western Cape needs to come up with a plan that is going to assist this community to maintain the school, to make sure that the school continues to operate under the community, because they've stated all these assets that they still have as a school. You can see that they are trying their level best to make sure that they try to improve the situation. We saw some of the school teachers' assistants that are there, but in the report we are only told about one, which is the teacher, which is also a principal. But we can see that, you know, the community is putting more efforts in making sure that they, you know, they make the school viable as possible, and make sure that they keep, you know, their children within the community, within their parents, of which I think it's something that we want also as the community to see it happening, that we don't take, you know, such small kids away from their parents. At least if it was, you know, a case whereby it was a high school kind of an arrangement, then we could reconsider in moving them to more viable schools. But the small children that, you know, we're speaking about, it will really be unfair that we try and remove, you know, such learners or children away from their parents. Also, Chair, I heard the Pastor Kotsie, who spoke about a school that has only 14 learners that still exist and with no threat of closing down. If also maybe we could get an understanding why the case is different to this one of 19 learners in this community. Let me pause there for now, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Advance. I think you have covered me on this one of the learners. I had 10, so you had 14, but anyway, they can just respond to that, the department, if there is a school with that number in the Department of Western Cape, I mean in the province of Western Cape, of this particular setup. But also what I picked up as well when Mr. Lewis was speaking, he said that the parents did not participate when you held your public participation process. Can you just also say to us what do you think was the issue? Because from what I see, your public participation process was also held when it was COVID, and I of course won't know what could have been the reason for you to hold public hearings at that time. And we see you are saying that there was no participation, but the reality now, we are realizing that the same community members are actually now coming here to come and raise that actually they are not satisfied, they still want the school to reopen and so on. And so on. I don't know what other members' views are, but with this type of a situation now from both the petitioner and the department, I am of the view that we probably need to have a meeting with DBE so that we are taken through this rural education policy, and we understand it better, so that we can be able to make recommendations to DPE with regards to this school and the situation that at least we have managed to hear what is happening. And my other interest from the side of the department, but also probably Honorable Skirso or other the petitioners would be able to help. There were learners with also special needs who were part of the school. What happened to them? Because I'm of the view that the schools that now you have taken the other learners to are your sort of normal schools. What has happened to the learners that have got your special needs problems. And can we give guarantees as the department that the transport and the hostel facility where you have taken these learners and that you have provided to them, is it safe for them to use?
We can't hear you, Chair.
You can't hear? You didn't hear since when I said it or when?
We've missed you at some point.
I think it was the reference network. We can hear clearly everything.
We can hear clearly, yeah.
We could hear you. Clearly. You started the apartment, tell us, and then you went missing.
Okay.
Can't hear you, Chair.
Which one do you want me to repeat?
Okay, Chair, you can continue.
Both the department did not hear both people from the department or only one?
No, no. My colleague.
So from my side, those are the things that are of my interest. But I think, and I don't know what other members really would say, I think we need DBE on this matter. We need to have a meeting with the DBE, even if we do invite the department as well, to be taken through this rural development policy. So that we understand it, and we also understand its implications to communities like those where we will have 19 learners. And like at they say, because you could see when Honorable Sukert have spoken together with Bosho, you can say that they are products of such schools, the passion in which they speak on those schools, and then the manner in which they praise those types of schools. So before we really make tangible or informative suggestions, one would, or recommendations rather, one would have the view that we have DPE to take us through this policy. And then in this situation as well, what then the policy would suggest so that we can make proper recommendations and see how do we assist the process. But besides that, I'm going to give Honorable Sukers to speak, and then after that, I'm going to allow the department to speak as well on everything that members of the committee have raised. Honorable Sukers.
Thank you very much, Chair. If you would allow me, I will keep my video off just for the sake of the bandwidth of my internet, because I'm on my phone's data at the moment. Chairperson, you are absolutely correct. I am the product of a multi-grade farm school. I went to a primary school, and consistently I have my education and my values that forms part of that education is what made me the person that I am today. If you go to see and you experience the learners in that environment, you will really understand why it is that we need to look at rural education with a different lens. I want to make a few points. I absolutely want to say thank you to Mr. Yankees, because I think what has happened here, and it is unfortunate that he has not been involved in the discussions or the process up until the time when I spoke to him, which was a week ago. So firstly, thank you, Mr. Yankees, for being so open and for your time that you gave in order for us to discuss the registration of the school. Thank you for that. I, however, want to make one correction. When we had the meeting with the department, we said that the community would look at alternatives. And we are asking the department to reopen and assist the community for such alternatives to be investigated. Now, I see that the department now focuses solely on the independent school model, which is fine with us because the community in itself is looking at alternatives, as we have said, in order to keep that school open. However, what is clear from the department, and I want to make it very clear, the presentation itself shows you again the very thing that I spoke of, and which share you again now to has thankfully said the Department of Basic Education need to come and speak to us around rural education. We cannot have the tail wagging the dog, and we have that all the time in these committee meetings. Lawmakers and public representatives are on the ground. We know what happens in our communities. We have law, we have policymakers or policy developers, like in this instance where we have a whole set of a checklist almost that the department is providing the committee with, that if you look at it, you would accept that the department has done their job. Fail for the one thing, which is that both Honorable Borsoff has raised and I, which is the context of in which reality policy needs, policy implementation happens and policy design. That is at a high level. The second point, however, is that the checklist as provided by the department, Chair, you rightfully raised, when was the public participation conducted? The second point that I want to make, the chairperson who signed the document, the district official brought that document to the side of the road. And the chairperson had to sign that on the side of the road on his bucky. That is the context in which this whole process finds itself or takes place. You have a community that doesn't speak Afrikaans in the way that you and I speak it, or the officials rather, but they are intimidated when you record something. This is the environment in which this whole public participation process. So I want to say, was it fair? It's in the mind of the community of Sekhukhat, it was not fair because they didn't even receive feedback on the concerns that they have raised. When it comes to the alternatives that as presented, and it makes me extremely upset when officials deal with our people like this. You have a checklist, you hear of a minister. The community in Sekhukhat thought that they were talking to the national minister. The call that I received, it was the national minister that signed this thing off. Just that one example gives you a good indication of the confusion in terms of communication. So if we talk about the checklist, you need to understand in what context have you communicated with this community. And I'm extremely, I feel it's unfair. And then the other thing that is also not okay for me, for lack of a better word to use, is the fact that I have dealt with this department. If I show you the formal letter that was referred to came because I sent communication to the head of the department and didn't receive any reply back. So you have gaps in between communication, and then finally I send a formal letter to the HOD. So let us not make as if, and this is the gap between sitting in an office in Cape Town and sitting in a and working on a farm somewhere in the middle of Nerens in the Karoo, and then we say, we have done our checkbox. You did not do it. There is no social environmental impact assessment that was presented here today. There was no consultation with children because you need, according to the legislation, to engage children in any legislation, decision, or policy that involves them. None of them was done. So let us quickly just deal with the presentation as presented by the department. Let us not make it if this is the ideal. All things are not equal in the presentation that the department has given the committee. So here are my points, point by point. Mr. Yankees, you have not, you've helped us, but unfortunately, sir, you were not part of what was done with the with the Western Cape Education Department. Let me say also to the committee, I had the meeting on the 7th of February as listed here. A week after that, the officials came to remove by force the equipment of the department after I received assurance from the HOD that they will keep the equipment there. That in itself gives you an example of the kind of communication and the conduct of the department in terms of fairness, in terms of due process. Let us not say that it has done perfect, because it has not. So Mr. Yankees need to tell this committee if he's got first-hand knowledge. The copy of the letter that you show, I can tell you, it was signed on the side of a road. In order for you to reach those communities, you need to drive with buses. How did you get all the parents to the public participation process in the first place? So what evidence is there that multi-grade learning is not effective? I am a product, Wayland is a product of multi-grade. Does the Western Cape Education believe, for example, that the world-renowned Montessori method, which multi-grade, which uses multi-grade, is not effective? Is the Western Cape Department aware that there are hundreds of unregistered suburban schools in the Western Cape that have less than 30 learners with one educator? And then point three, the Western Cape Education Department says that a learner ratio of 1 to 20 in rural areas is unaffordable. This is the point that Honorable Boshoff makes. This is treating rural and urban schools the same. What socioeconomic studies have done have been done to prove this? Point four, would the Western Cape Education Department rather be sued than to work to create a solution? And this is where my, to say a different word, I would say it like my mother says, your blood boils, is when you realize that you are treating communities in this manner because we know they don't have the money to take you to court. It was the very first sentences that was spoken to us there. The MEC has made the decision, and only a court of law. I feel our people deal with arrogant officials when it comes to processes. It's either arrogance or insensitivity. But as I'm sitting here and I look at all of this and I think of those communities, we are not doing them justice. If these officials just have a heart to listen to those people, they would actually say, let us have the meeting to look at a different solution for Siyakuchat. But they won't. It is because we deal with it from a paper perspective, an administrative perspective. Point four. Point five. You mentioned the best interests of the child, but the Constitution says the best interests of the child are paramount and must be immediately realizable. So you must examine all alternatives, which has not been done. I want to say to the committee, that's very nice. It's not a nice, but let's say a nice presentation about Klaarstroom and Prince Albert. Those alternatives were not even given to this community at the time. It wasn't. There was none of that communication was followed up by the district officials after the community made it clear that they do not want to move their children. Then in point six, it is a pity that we do not have the HOD here. And for the notice of this minute as well, the Minister of Education, who has not seen fit to attend this meeting. In fact, in this time that I serve on this committee, I can count on three fingers, maybe how many times I saw the Minister of Education here. This shows the lack of concern for the community by both the HOD and because it's such a small community. The officials lack the information, Chairperson. Prior to my letter to the HOD that was received, I sent two WhatsApps asking for urgent help. I eventually wrote to him, as I said before. Also, the community asked the Western Cape Education Department to consider various options, not just the independent schools. And let me just correct the Minister of Education. I fell into that now with this presentation, the MEC here in the Western Cape. In terms of visiting the appearing before this committee, and specifically today as well. So I just need to correct that. I'm not talking about the national minister. The education department has a Western Cape has a collaboration schools model, and the community has asked about this. So I'm asking again, will the education department consider a collaboration school as well and not take any option off the table? Because I see we're just narrowing down on the one option. So will they consider other options? Point seven, the miscommunication in the education department is evident, as I've said. They claim they agreed not to remove the the property of the Western Cape Education Department, yet, as I said earlier, they tried to do just that and even threatened the caretaker that they will bring the police there. So you had a lot of children outside standing there, and the school needs to now give the equipment. So it doesn't link up to what was presented here. Point eight, and this is for the national department. How long has the draft policy on rural education been underdeveloped? It was gazetted in 2017 for public comment, but development must have taken place before that. We've been waiting for much longer than 5 years for this policy. So that policy has not been finalized, and so we cannot really say that policy is being implemented here. And so perhaps the Department of Basic Education can address this issue. And then in point eight, with innovative developments like online education, it becomes possible to have a high school education in a school like Siyakuchat. And I have only two more points, Chair. The Western Cape Education mentions Section 29.3 of the Bill of Rights on independent schools, but they don't quote Section 29.3 and 4 that says that the state can assist independent schools. And then lastly, as I said, point 10, I am not a lawyer, and maybe the regulations have changed, but Section 2A of the regulation states the applicant for registration must satisfy the head of the department that it can reasonably be expected that the average number of learners of school-going age who will be enrolled at the independent school in question during the first 12 months following the date on which such application was received by the head of the department will not be fewer than 20, unless such learners are learners with special education needs, in which case the minimum number of learners in the school for special education needs must be 10. And in answer to the chairperson, some of the parents, because of the problems, then opted to place their children in other schools. In Prince Albert, I know, is one area where there is family that they could then keep the children with special needs. But Pastor Willie is able to elaborate on that. I just have that one that I know of children that has been moved with special needs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Anyone from the department?
Yes, thank you. I will try to respond to as many of the questions possible. I will not respond to the comments made, and my colleagues must also assist me. I think Mr. Jonkos or Mr. Walker, I'm not sure. I don't think there were LSEN learners among those learners, but if so, can you perhaps respond to that question? The questions of raised by Dr. Tembekwayo is about the vision of the department. Yes, that is the vision of the department. Quality education for every child in every school, in every classroom in the province. And that vision is not in opposition with the closure of the school, not at all. It is exactly because of that reason that the department feel educationally that where you have one teacher who operates as the principal, who had to teach over two phases and who had to teach over six grades, that it's impossible to provide quality education to those children. So the closure of the school and the vision of the department it's not the same. Then the 14 learners at the school somewhere in the province, I'm not even going to ask whether it exists. It could exist, and I will take it as that. At the moment, the department is closing schools every year. This is not the first school that we are closing. We've closed about three schools last year. And the department is looking within the context of the regulations of 2013, looking at all primary schools with less than 135 learners. We are looking at those schools and we are closing those schools. We are now busy developing a provincial plan for closing those schools over the next 5 to 6 years, all of them, because it's unviable. Our learners can get a better education at better resource schools. Then about the uniform, when we close schools, there's normally a provision that is made that the school receiving the learners must allow the learners to continue with their current uniform until such time that either the department, either the parents can afford it, or where the department can assist, the department will help the parent. If the school is closed, where are these learners accommodated? Whenever we close a school, there are normally three options that we follow. We prefer the learners to stay in a hostel because we feel that is the best and safer place where a learner can get food during the day, where the learner can be looked after to sit and do his or her homework. The second option is if there's no hostel in the vicinity, then we provide the learner with a bursary to stay at private people. That's the second option. And of course, the third option is the general option that we use, and that is where we transport learners on a daily basis. At the moment, we are transporting 60,000 learners every day in the province. But normally, the distances are a little bit shorter. In this case, it would be unfair to transport the learners from Groot Kloof every day to school and back to school. It wouldn't make education sense. The learners of the school were offered, at least the parents were offered, and that is what we prefer, that we put all the learners in the hostel at Teske Gedenk Primary School, where there are sufficient place to place the learners in that hostel. Some of the parents opted for that option, and those learners are currently in the hostel. Other parents didn't opt for it. But the point that I want to make is that when we close a school, accommodation arrangements are made, or we ensure that the learner gets to school. In terms of the South African Schools Act, within which we operate, the two entities that we consult are the SGB one, and then the parents within a community set up. There's no provision in the Schools Act that we must consult with learners. However, it is the right of the parent at the community consultation to bring his or her child with to that meeting, where the learner can then make a representation. So it's not totally out, but there's no separate provision for presentation to learners. I think Honorable Boshoff, you are correct. We operate within the rules, and the rules for us are the legislation and policy that's promulgated by the National Assembly, or in the province by the provincial legislature. As officials, we cannot do our own heads things, so we operate within the framework of those policies and pieces of legislation. You raise the issue whether bigger schools provide necessarily better education. I cannot pronounce on that because I haven't seen research, or I haven't done any research on that matter. I did not understand the question of the member Adoons about the fact when farmers evict their farm workers, what are we doing as an education department? I couldn't understand that question. She also asked, where does learners go after grade 6 at the school? When learners complete their primary school in these small schools, they then attend the high school. And for these learners, the closest high schools are in Beaufort West, yes. And some of these schools in Beaufort West, and Mr. Jonkers, you can attest to that, do have hostels where these learners are accommodated. Some of them even go to Oudtshoorn, where we also have hostels for these learners. Then I'm not going to respond to the list of honorable sukers. Safe to say that the HOD is not here at this meeting today because the HOD is on leave and I am acting as the HOD. Thank you, Chair. I can just want to ask my colleagues if there's anything that I've missed, Mr. Jonkers or Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. I'm Julie Jonkers. I'm the District Director, Eden in Central Karoo, meaning that the school is therefore in part of my district. I just need to mention two things. Number one is that we do not have any Elson learners at Seku Khat. Secondly, in terms of the school with 14 learners, as a district, we are having two schools up for closure. That is Mooi Uitsig and Rooi Rivier. The one has got 14 learners and the other one has got 27 learners. So it means therefore then I can concur with what the HOD said, that we are closing schools on a regular basis and there's no specific school like Seku Khat that we are now singling out as a school for closure. This is a normal process that we do follow. My HOD also mentioned in terms of the safety and the accommodation of learners as well as the transport, and that has all been taken care of. I can just also conclude on the matter that this decision was definitely not taken lightly. It was also not only taken in terms of policy, but we took into consideration all the matters that the honorable members just mentioned. And I'm going to go down that particular list. So Chairperson, that is all I would like to add at this stage. Thank you.
Chair, I think we will conclude on that note.
No, it's fine. Thank you. Thank you from Honorable Sukers and also the department. Members, are there any follow-ups? Are we okay? I see the end of Dr. Tembekwane.
Could you unmute me? Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I wrote on the chat group about the number that I can call so that I can report a certain problem in the Western Cape department of a certain principal who's not treating his staff professionally. I only need that number, please. Thanks.
Can you respond quickly to that?
Yeah, I'm trying to read in the chat.
Oh, okay.
I think if the honorable member has the information and the details, she can email that to the office of the head of the department, and we can then take care of that from there, Chair. Mr. Brown does have the contact detail of the office of the HOD.
Can I be unmuted here, please? Oh, who's that? Chairperson.
We can hear you, Ma.
Yes, I was just saying, I don't need an email address. I need a cell phone number of a person that I can engage on this matter. Email address is something of another day of another sort. I need a number that I can talk to the person immediately after this committee has ended. Thanks.
Chair, can I help if the member has a pen to write, because I struggle to get into this chat. My number is 082-82-44-8-1.
Thank you.
And then, again, Mr. Luis, there is the, on the chat as well, they are, it's on our postcard, so says the, what type of transport? Are you able to tell what type of transport have you given this learner? I think I've also raised this question. I'll say if it is.
Mr. Jonkers or Walker, can you respond to that?
Chair, good morning. The transport which we are currently using for the learners at Tesco Hostel, it's a school bus where they are transported every fortnight. Our transport division at the district was in the process of facilitating or setting up a learner transport route for that route down to Sekuhat. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hawker. I take it that now we are fine with interrogation. Honorable Sukar?
Yeah, Chair, I think I think I will, if you will, let me not let you indulge me. I just wanted to say it's very clear, Mr. Walker's answer to the committee. The learner transport to Sekuhat, they're busy setting up the route. That should give a good example of, in terms of this whole process, and why it is that I am making the comments that I've made in terms of the process. It is very clear. In terms of the questions that I've asked, I just want to know if, for the record, because we are in a formal meeting of the committee, that Mr. Lewis just say why it is that he would not respond to the questions that I have asked. Thank you.
Chair, Ms. Honorable Sukers mostly commented on what we have presented to the portfolio committee, hence there was no need to respond to it.
Okay, let's now not make it an... are there specific questions that you think are not responded to, Honorable Sukers?
The question really was that I asked, and I think I asked this for the department as well, in terms of how long has the draft policy on rural education been underdeveloped? And was it gazetted in 2017 for public comment? And then I asked the question in terms of the policy has not been finalized. So we cannot really say that policy is being implemented here. So as the head of acting head of the department, it would be very valuable for Mr. Lewis to give his input in terms of that. Thank you.
Chair, the Rural Education Policy Act resides under the Department of Basic Education and not the WCED. So maybe if Honorable Sukers raised that question with DBE, they could perhaps provide her with a better response than for me, providing a response that might be incorrect.
No. Okay. No, it's fine then. Like I said, I think probably we need to end this minute, like I have suggested, that we need as a committee to have DBE to take us through this rural education policy. And it should also be linked to this petition, you know, so that they also advise us then in a petition of this man, what do you do? Because I don't think from us as members, there is a member that would be able to take us through this policy. And I don't think we are informed or we understand it to an extent that we can be able to engage and be able to make proper recommendations to this matter. I'm not sure if people understand what I'm saying, and is there an or there is the end of Makaya?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and good afternoon to, or good morning to all the Honourable members in the House. I just wanted to agree with the sentiments of the members that is requesting that we come back and we do a presentation to the House on, you know, the areas that cover rural education, but more importantly, that we also present on areas of how we look at closure and mergers. If we could be given an opportunity to do that in a dedicated time, we will be able to come and shed more light to the members on the very pertinent issues which they have asked to be raised here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. No, then that's fine. I think members agree with that proposal, eh?
Yes, sir, we agree.
All right. Yeah. So I think let's close it for now at that proposal that we still now, that is still very fresh and new in this quarter. Our secretary must just look in a slot where we can probably have two meetings. We normally do that, where we can have two meetings in once, and the department can take us through. I think Makaya also understands what is it that we need, if they can be able to brief us on that. And also they need to try to respond in a situation of this petition, so that we are able to make recommendations as to what happens moving forward. I think if members allow, I want to close it, there. Chief the committee. What is this school fund now, Honourable Supers?
At the moment, Chair, there is a fund that is within the school. I don't know how Mr. Lewis would be able to provide us really with, I don't know how it works, obviously, but the community has requested that they be able to access the school fund in order for them to use it for the amenities that is currently at the school. Because there is a school fund, but it has been, they don't have access to that.
But can we ask the members please to take the numbers that Mr. Lewis has given them to contact him directly?
That's fine, thank you.
Because I think those are just you know, those issues, I think it's issues they can be able to talk about over the phone. I'm not sure if they did take note of the number as well when it was given to Dr.
Kimikai.
Mr. Lewis, can you just repeat the number?
Number is 082-84-811. But with your permission, I can quickly respond to Honourable Supers on the question. The answer is no. The community cannot access the fund. Yeah. That's
why. Why, Mr. Lewis?
The school has been closed.
Okay. So that is the answer, Ms. Honorable Sukars. And at this level, then let me thank you very much, Acting HOD, Mr. Lewis, and your team for being part of this meeting. Like we have said, that we are going to ask the department to properly brief us on this policy. And then we'll be able to engage on this matter when we are briefed on the committee. But thank you very much for coming to the meeting and be able to clarify and defend your decision if that's what you were doing. And thank you very much to DBE as well for being part of the meeting. We are closing this part. We are just going to adopt the minutes. Can you take us there, Mr. Brown?
Yes, Chair, from my side, thank you very much on behalf of the Western Cape Education Department. And just to put it on record for your meeting, we are more than willing to assist the community with whatever alternative options they have. Where we can help them, we will do so.
Why do you think it must be alternative?
Well,
it's fine, Mr. Lewis. It's fine.
Thank you for the understanding, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Thank you to the community members as well that joined us in the meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you, everybody from Sekuhat. We appreciate. God bless.
Thank you, Chair. William Jansis, Western Cape. Bye-bye to all.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay, let's proceed. Well, members, these are the minutes of the 19th of April. 9:30, page 1 is the attendance. And apologies, page 2, the attendance of the department. We opened the meeting and we welcome the members back, and we reflected on the flag, and the agenda was adopted by Honorable Morotsetla and seconded by Honorable Yabo. We handed over to our conduct advisor to brief us on the strategic planning, and then we had a structure that was presented by Mam Chekwane. And then those are our observations. And then we had our deliberations on the study tour and also on the appeal. in KZN and Eastern Cape, and on the other matters as well. And then there were replies. And then we have made a resolution on the bill. We have made resolutions of the study tool and also on the oversight. And then we considered the minutes of the other meeting. And then there was a draft report of the committee 2022-2023. and then the draft minutes, we adopted those minutes and the reports, and then we adopted the second quarter reports as well, and then we attend at 11:47. Any corrections? Any corrections? Can you take us to the resolution level? Let's make a reflection on that. I just want to reflect on the KZN and Eastern Cape. Members would know that we have made an application as the committee for this oversight visit. And then after that, then there was most special house sitting with the president. There was an appointment, of an ad hoc committee that would deal with the plan. So our application was not approved then because they need to still set the terms and reference of that ad hoc committee, which I think it's going to be an ad hoc committee that deals with KZN and Eastern Cape floods. So as the committee, what things are now, we are not going to embark on this oversight till further notice. And on the issues of the international study tool, like we've said that we've asked the secretariat to revive it. I think they are busy with that. And the issues of Bella Bill, did we get it, Llewellyn? The final go ahead.
Chairperson, we have approval, and I can share with you the application with the papers that we have targeted. But we have approval, and I'm sure we are more than ready to place as the secretariat. We're just waiting for the go ahead from the portfolio committee, Chairperson.
Okay. Yeah, so looks like things now are in perfect order. So probably the committee will just need to agree on the dates of going out for the advert and for how long. Let's see what's to be in the study tour. I don't know if there are any proposals or we should probably but the committee should know when, because we have agreed that everything would be agreed by the committee. So I don't know if probably we must make a suggestion that we go out for the adverts from the 15th of May till 15th of June. For members of the public to comment.
Agreed, Chair.
I agree.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Thank you very much, Honorable Whip and Honorable Lucia. So members, every member now of the committee knows that we are going to put the advert from the 15th of May to 15th of June. And then we will only come back to the issue of Bella Bill after those dates when everything has been consolidated to discuss other than the steps that would need to follow. So the issue of study tour, when it comes back from the secretariat, Honorable Lucia, then we are going to engage on it. For now, they have not yet brought it back. So on that note, can I ask members that we adopt the minutes as a true reflection? Can I adopt the minute?
I move to adopt, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Advance. Seconda? Akolile, are you here on a meeting or you just logged on?
I'm here, Chair.
Go on, okay. Go on. Honorable, it's here.
Seconda.
Go on. It's 10 past 12. We are attending this meeting till next week, Tuesday. Thank you very much, Honorable Members.
Not that there must participation in the international tour.
Thank you, Chair.
Must be revoked. Thank you.
That's because I didn't speak in one meeting, now the life must end.
Not that I never speaks in the meeting.